The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, Radiophiles. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon here on the Guy James Show. It's a gorgeous day here in Southwest Florida, and I hope it's nice where you're at, too. It's currently about 78, 79 degrees outside, the sun shining, and a gorgeous day. A lot going on in the program today. We've got a couple of great guests I want to tell you about. Eric Margolis is going to be with us coming up, just around the bottom of the hour. As you know, he's an internationally known columnist, expert on the Middle East, and he's going to be with us around 3:30, currently writing for the Toronto Sun. And around, in the second hour, Bob Furtick. A lot of you know about Bob. Bob's the administrator of the big popular website, Democrats.com. And he's going to be here talking about the impeachment effort that he and some other folks are leading. And they're getting a lot of press on it, doing a lot of work on it. Who knows? Who knows what might happen? Going to depend on us taking the House back, though, that's for sure. A little later on, we're going to have a few minutes of Republican love. Yes, we are. We're going to have some of that a little bit later on today. Those cards and letters have started coming in, and we're happy to hear from those folks. They always provide us with a little entertainment. Speaking of entertainment, did you read where the state of Texas took Tom DeLay's gun permit away from him? Now, what's that about? Why did they do that? They think he's a danger? I mean, I've always thought the guy was a danger. He's a danger to America. But, yeah, they took his gun permit away. My, oh, my, oh, my. What a sad thing for a Texan to have his gun permit taken away. My. A whole lot going on. The news nowadays, the political news anyway, is pretty hard to keep up with. I know we watch it very closely. Always lots of things happen over the weekend. The carnage in Iraq. God, is it? How much worse can that get in Iraq? There's no civil war. They keep saying there's no civil war, but it looks like a civil war to me, and it looks like a civil war to the Iraqis. In fact, that's some of the, you know, the Iraqis are saying themselves that it looks like a civil war. It's a mess. It really is. And our government's just trucking along here. Bush making simple-minded statements, as he always does, and the Sunday morning programs, Condoleezza was on there. You know, when I look at our government anymore, since these people took over, and I know some of this has been waning for a long time, but I really believe we're no longer a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, the way it started out to be. And it really seems to me that all of that went out the window a while back when the Reagan Revolution took place, when St. Ronnie Reagan was in. That's when the great divide between the classes really began in our country. We had it, in the 1800s to the early 1900s, the great middle class evolved, and now the great middle class is disappearing once again. And Ronnie Reagan's administration had a lot to do with that. And that's when the greed of the American upper class took hold and became I guess you'd call it the drug of choice for the Republican Party. They feed that greed by slanting everything toward those who have plenty, and they show complete disdain for those who have too little. And it was a time during the Reagan administration when greed became the unofficial mantra of the Republican Party, and this monster is now out of control. Greed, oh my God, they worship at the altar of greed. Did you know, and I know a lot of you do, but I'll restate it for those of you who don't know. Did you know that about 30 years ago, the average corporate CEO made about 10 times that of the average worker? 10 times. Pretty good living, don't you think? But did you also know that that figure has bloated to 1,000 times the average Joe and Jane worker now? That's right. The average CEO makes 1,000 times what the average worker in their particular business does. Seems to me that's a little out of whack. You know, tell me, truthfully, is any man worth 1,000 times that of another working man? And I think the answer is absolutely not. Oh, yeah. You know, you can make an argument. There's corporate superstars out there who have made their companies buckets of cash, and really no one can deny that they deserve to make good money. But 1,000 times that of the average worker in their companies, you know, I would think the average CEO that made it, I would think I'd be embarrassed by that. I really would. When is enough enough? What's the old saying? Enough is never enough for the man for whom enough is too little. And a lot of these people, I just think I would. I'd hang my head in shame if I had to walk out into a plant or an office someplace and know that I made 1,000 times more than the guy sitting there toiling, doing his day-to-day job. I couldn't take that. And really, it's way out of whack, and it's getting worse every day. A couple of years ago when the Enron thing blew up, corporate America made they made some noises like they were going to balance things out a bit concerning that pay. But it's really clear right now that that was nothing more than useless rhetoric. The gap is getting wider and wider and wider once again. But this divide is something the leaders of the Republican Party relish. It keeps the power where they want it. It assures them that truckloads of cash is going to be available for their political campaigns. You know, more money for their fat cat pals mean more money in their campaign coffers, which means that they can buy their seats in the House and the Senate almost on a permanent basis. And yes, money begets power, and power begets money. It's a wonderful perpetual motion machine for the Republicans right now. The really interesting part of this is the diversion which has taken place right under the noses of the average Republican voter. He hasn't benefited by this divide among the classes, but he still votes for him. Why does he vote for the Republicans? Because the Republican political machine has absolutely convinced the average Republican voter that the real issues are abortion, lower taxes, and smaller government. You've heard that over and over and over again. And the crazy part of this is that the powers that be in the party have given the fat cat pals most of the tax cut money. They've done almost nothing about the abortion issue, and they've grown the federal government into an out of control domestic spying war-hungry behemoth that's eaten the average guy's cash at a rate previously unimaginable to even the most economically pessimistic citizen of this country. Think of what the national debt has done. It's doubled during the Bush's term. The budget deficit is a runaway freight train. Savings are now in the minus column. Wages are stagnant. Energy costs are spiraling out of control, and it appears that over 30% of Americans are willing to put up with that so long as the Republican hierarchy keeps promising them a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And the only thing is that there's going to be no rainbow. The pots of gold are already spoken for, already stolen by a handful of greedy bastards that don't give a tinker's damn about anything except their own fat bank account and the power it gives them over the rest of us. Just yesterday, the true story, I had a Republican loudmouth come up to me and ask me how I could be a Democrat because, in his words, those damn Democrats give everything away to the welfare people and start all the wars. You know, I really liked that second one, started all the wars. Didn't Daddy Bush and Junior Bush start a couple of them? Didn't Ronnie Reagan start that little fray down in Grenada? But anyway, this idiot stood there and spewed every idiotic talking point thrown out by the Republican Party for the last 30 years. He was totally brainwashed, totally unaware of it. Ignorance really is bliss, I guess, and this poor sucker will keep right on voting against his own interests because he's been completely propagandized by the right-wing spin machine for just one reason: to get his vote so they can stay in power and keep raping and pillaging the American treasury. It's absolutely unbelievable. It's really hard to fathom someone being so gullible and stupid, but evidently there's another 51 million Americans just like him. Well, maybe not quite that many anymore, but a few of them have shed the shackles of neocon spin and come to their senses, but a significant number of them remain under the spell of the Republican trance, which has been so effectively put on those poor suckers. And it reminds me of a joke, and some of you may have heard this, but I think this sums it up perfectly. A guy goes into a bar and he orders a drink. And the bar has a robot bartender, and the robot serves him an absolutely perfectly prepared cocktail and then asked him, what's your IQ? And a man replied, 150. And the robot proceeds to make conversations about global warming factors and quantum physics and spirituality and biomimicry, environmental interconnectedness and string theory and nanotechnology and sexual proclivities. And the customer is really impressed and thinks, you know, this is really cool. So we decided to test this robot. And he walks out of the bar, turns around, he comes back in for another drink. And again, the robot served him a perfectly prepared drink and asked him, what's your IQ? The man responds, oh, about 100. So almost immediately, the robot starts talking, but this time about football, NASCAR, baseball, supermodels, favorite fast foods, guns, and women's breasts. Really impressed, the man leaves the bar and decides to give the robot one more test. And he heads out and he returns. The robot serves him and asks, what's your IQ? And the man replies, about 50, I think. And the robot says, real slowly, so, you gonna vote for Bush again? Ain't it the truth? Ain't it just the damn sorry truth? That's just about the way it is nowadays. But we run into people like that all the time that are going to stick with it, and you can stand there and hand them absolute facts every day, all day, and they won't accept them. They will not accept them. I don't know about you, but it scares me to know that we've got that many people in this country that just, they won't accept the truth. They're living in la-la land. They think Mr. Bush is their great savior. And they're willing to follow him right up to the gates of hell, I guess. But that's the way it is. So we've got to work hard. This is an election year. It's a midterm year. It's an important year, probably one of the most important election years there's ever been in this country. And I want to ask all my voters, all my listeners, to be voters this year. Get everybody involved. And that's the thing we're going to have to do. We're going to have to get everybody involved. Everybody's going to go out and work like hell this year. And do our utmost to try and straighten this thing out, get this train back on the tracks again. That's the only way it's going to happen. Hard work. Not gonna win the House back or the Senate back or even the White House back a couple years from now, but just sitting around saying the Republicans are bad. The Democrats are going to have to get out and stand for something. You're going to have to let everybody know what they stand for. They're just going to have to work very, very, very hard at it, and that's going to be the name of the game. We're going to pause for a short break right now. Going to be right back. Don't go away.
Who's in the White House? Bush, 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 Bush. Who's in the White House?
Bush, 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 Bush.
Who's in the White House?
Bush, 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 Bush.
Who's in the White House?
Bush, 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 Bush.
Who's in the White House?
Bush, 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 Bush.
Who's in the White House?
Bush, 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 Bush.
Who's in the White House?
Bush, 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 Bush. Bush, 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 Bush.
Listening to the Guy James Show. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon. Eric Margolese coming up in a few minutes. We're taking your calls, 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254. And we have who on the phone?
Alice. Alice is on the phone for you, Guy.
Okay. Hi, Alice. How are you doing today?
Okay.
Nice of you to call. Good to hear from you.
Is this Guy?
Yes, it is.
Oh, wonderful. I'm so glad to hear from you.
Well,
it's so good to have you back on the air.
Well, it's good to
I've
be back.
I've grown a year older waiting for you.
Well, I guess I've grown
to help.
I've grown a year older waiting for me, too.
Isn't it funny how those years go by?
Oh, they don't take it. And it seems like the older they get, the faster they go, and it's just all a blur.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you calling from, Alice?
Humboldt County.
Humboldt County, California.
That's right.
That's
same
right.
Place.
Yes, yes.
I haven't moved.
All right. Have you lived, you know, Alice, have you lived in California all your life?
No, I was born in Fargo, North Dakota.
Oh.
Cold, so, cold.
That's indeed it is.
Came to L.A.
Yeah. And what year did you come to L.A.? Now, I'm really prying now.
Well, let's see, I was 11, so that would make it 25, wouldn't it?
25.
Uh-huh.
1925?
Yep.
Oh my, that's a little
yeah.
That's a little past my yeah.
And I know it's past everybody's. I think.
Well, those were the wild and woolly days in California when people started moving out there and all, and the people from all over the country started moving there for kind of like it is here in Florida now.
That's right.
People moving in from all over. What's on your mind today, Alice?
Well, we're still having trouble with the crooked voting machines. I'm really worried about our next election. I really am. And I don't know if there's been any headway at all.
You know, Alice, I'm inclined to agree with you, and we're going to do a show on that next week about the voting machines.
Oh, good.
I'm worried about it myself. And it almost appears nowadays that the Democrats would have to win an election 2-1 or something to actually win it.
Yeah.
You know, take Ohio, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried about Ohio in this governor's election this year. Here's Blackwell ahead of the voting machines. He's the guy in charge of them, the Secretary of State, and he's running for governor. How do you think that's going to go, you know?
Well, and probably you know how it'll go.
Yeah. Yeah, he made darn sure the last time that things went right for the Republican Party, and I wouldn't put it past him to do it again. He's wanting to be governor awfully bad. Let me ask you, Alice, you're governor in California. I haven't heard a lot about Arnold lately. What kind of a job is he doing?
Well, he's trying to be a better boy, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I think he's trying to be president.
I think you're right. And who was it? Orrin Hatch, a couple of years ago or a year ago maybe, right after Arnold got elected, tried to introduce a bill in the Senate where somebody that was foreign-born could become president of the United States. And, of course, that was in direct relation to Arnold Schwarzenegger's candidacy and his governorship out there. There's no doubt about it.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if that'll hold them back or not, but...
Well, they've got to do that first, and...
That's right.
Yeah, and I don't think they'll get it done. I really don't. Of course, I think they're kind of losing a little bit of their steam right now, so the Republicans, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I heard the best speech by Al Gore a week ago. It was just great. Half-hour speech, and he was right on.
You know, it makes you wonder, where was that Al Gore when he ran for president? It's too bad that...
Well, you know, I don't know. They just gave up, I guess.
Yeah, they kept him bottled up, and, you know, his advisors, I think, did a terrible job telling him what he ought to do this and he ought to do that. I think if he just walked out on the stage every day and been Al Gore, well, I think he would be president today. Of course, they still might have stolen it in Florida. Who knows?
Yeah, that's right. Well, he sure gave a good speech. He said... They're coming our way.
I think he's right.
And
you know,
even the Republicans.
Well, he can give a good speech. Al's a great speaker.
Yeah,
and a good one. You know, there was all that talk about him being wooden in his demeanor and all that. He's a fun guy. He's got a great sense of humor. He's a fine, fine speaker. And, you know, people, it's too bad the nation didn't get a chance to know Al Gore a little better. And I'll forever... Unless he runs and gets elected, I'll forever feel bad for Al Gore because he was rightfully the president of the United States. There's no doubt in my mind.
That's right. Well, you sometimes wonder, what's the reason why good people lose out on it? You know?
Well, I think it was out-and-out thievery that time, and I don't think it was, you know, I think it was destined to be that way, and maybe there's not a whole lot they could have done about it, but it was a sorry chapter in American history. So, Alice, thanks so much for calling today.
Well, it's so nice to have you back.
Well, thank you. And it's good to know that you're listening.
Okay.
Thank you, Alice.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
Ah, Alice, Humboldt County, California. I imagine the sun's shining out there as well today. A beautiful day in many parts of the nation today. We're it's 21 past the hour here on the on East Coast time, Eastern Standard Time. I don't know if it's called Eastern Standard Time. We call it Eastern Time. I'm not sure anymore. We're going to go back to the phones, and we've got James on the phone. Hello, James. Is James with us?
You got Gene on the phone.
Gene on the phone. Okay, it's Gene. Hi, Gene. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
Well, just checking in, guy. I'm here in Naples and giving you a call. A couple of things. Number one, it's great to have you on the air weekdays. For a lot of us that can't get to you on weekends can listen in now at work. I wonder how many people have been fired so far listening to the Guy James Show while they're at work.
Oh, man, I hate to have that on my shoulders. Yeah,
I know. But it's good to have you on weekdays. In 5 days, that's even better. What's the reaction been to the new times?
Been very good. Lots of folks listening, a lot of interest, and a lot of our old listeners are back. I get lots of email every day from folks around the country who are glad we're back. We just had a caller on right before you called, a lady from Humboldt County, California, who's been one of our loyal listeners ever since we came on the air. So she, all our old timers are coming back.
Well, everybody that's listened to the Guy James Show over the last 3 years, it's the number one Democrat radio show in America, and wherever you go, you're going to have busloads following you on the air, that's for sure. We've listened to all the other Democrat shows out there, and yours is the best, guy. And congratulations for keeping it going and waving the flag high for us.
Well, thanks, and we intend to do that. That's our mission here, and you know, we're here to work on the grassroots of people here in Florida. This is a battleground state, and of course, we're talking to people all around the country, but one thing has been a concern to me is I think the DNC and a lot of folks have ignored us down here in the grassroots, and that's something we want to change.
Well, I'll tell you, grassroots, is, as far as I'm concerned, that is the Democrat Party, and I choose to at least look at it that way, guy. I am the president of the local club down here in Naples, Florida, the Collier County Democratic Club, and I guess myself and some others on our board of directors are looking entirely now at our local situation, building the grassroots organization on a local basis, and not necessarily following the national lead, because where's it got it? Where's it gotten us in the last few years? We're taking this thing more from a local perspective and building the party right here at home.
Well, I think that's the right approach. I'm not enamored with the DNC as of late. They've made a lot of mistakes the last couple of elections. They haven't been as steadfast as they ought to be, and I don't like the approach. And I think what you're trying to do is very, very important. The grassroots is, if it's going to be done, the grassroots are going to do it.
Well, it's real simple math when you think about it, guy. If a club or an individual county, and I'm going to throw a number out there, I think there's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,000 counties in America, plus or minus some. But if every one of those, every county in America, every club, every Democratic club in every county in America increased its membership or registered at least, let's say, 3% more Democrats in their individual counties, well, that the DNC would not only be rendered moot, but they would be in power again, because we could change elections that way. It's so much easier to do it at the grassroots level instead of just throwing money at the problem, which is what the DNC and the RNC seems to be all about.
Well, and the sad part of it is all the money, most of the money anyway, ends up in their hands, and they decide what to do with it and where to put it and so forth. And I think on a local level is the place where it ought to be.
Well, when you think about the inequities in the money, Guy, the amount of money that's thrown into national campaigns by the DNC, the lifeblood goes begging at the grassroots level, while at the top, two or three key races across the country is where all the money goes. Well, that to me shows no vision, no leadership, no look towards the future of the party. We have to not only worry about what's going on today, but make sure our party's strong for the future of America down the road 10, 20 years from now.
I absolutely agree. First, we're going to have to start locally. I mean, sure, we need to work on the national and state and federal races, but just here, right here in Florida, we need to work on some local elections, get some Democrats. We got a Democrat elected here recently in our area, and Martha Simon. We're awfully proud of that, and there's a lot more work to be done here locally.
Well, that's a start. That's exactly what we have to do.
Gene, I think we're losing you on your cell phone. I think you're on a cell, I think. And
you caught me on a cell phone.
There we go.
That's just great. I'm politically incorrect. I'm eating a hamburger, driving, and talking on the cell phone all at one time. I'll be surprised if I live through this conversation. But I'll get the phone and let you go, Guy. Congratulations on your show. And I want every listener to remember, begin at home. Triple Neal said it right. All politics starts where you live. Put your money, your energies, your... Yes.
Thank you, Gene. It's good to hear from you. And we kind of lost him on the cell there, but... very, very good to hear from you. I think he's got the right idea. All politics are local, and it starts on a local level, and that's the way we need to start looking at it. We need to start looking on our state races, our local races, with a little bit more importance than we have in the past. We really, really need to work hard on those. I hope the DNC takes that a little more serious. But, you know, one of the things they're trying to do, I know they're trying to get a bunch of Democratic clubs here in Florida together and to form a little bit of a power base. And we got somebody on the phone? I don't know. I'm in the dark. Anyway, it's good to hear from you out there. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. All right. We're getting getting things lined up for our interview coming up in just a minute or two with Eric Margolese. Going to be having him in. I don't know where he's at today. I don't know whether he's in Florida or Toronto or where he's at today, but he writes for the Toronto Sun. I'll have to ask him where he's at today. I know he'll tell us. But Eric Margolese is, well, just one interesting guy. He's a regular commentator on the CBC and Canada TV and CNN and CNN International and Fox and CTV, and he's appeared on Good Morning America, ABC TV News, CBS TV News. He's on PBS New York. He's been everywhere. And he's a contributing foreign editor on the Sun National Media of Canada, the American Conservative Magazine in Washington, D.C. He's a regular columnist with Sun Media. He's got affiliation with the International Institute of Strategic Studies in London, the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., the Institute of Regional Studies in Islamabad, Pakistan. Went to the School of Foreign Service in Georgetown University. I don't know how you can get a better credential than that. And the University of Geneva, Switzerland, and New York University. A learned man, a man who knows a lot about the situation in the Middle East right now and that entire area over there. He's been there a lot, reported on it a lot. And he wrote a great column yesterday, I think it was Sunday, called it The Final Say, 3 years after George Bush declared mission accomplished, parts of Iraq lie in ruins, threatened by anarchy and approaching civil war. And we've asked Eric to come on. Eric, are you with us?
I'm with you and glad to be.
Well, where are you in Canada today?
I am in Toronto today. We're showing the first signs of spring.
Oh, the beautiful city of Toronto. I love Toronto. Absolutely. The underground city and Greektown, and just all the beautiful places up there. I think Toronto is just one of the nicest, cleanest big cities that I've ever been in.
Well, I'm with you.
We ask you to come on the program today because I think you're as much of an expert on the area, the Middle East, as anybody could possibly be. And I read with interest your article yesterday about what's happening in Iraq right now, why we went there, and how it's turned out, and Operation Swarmer and the whole business. We've got all this business in the past few days about they're trying to blame everything on the media for the problems. How do you see it?
You mean the Bush administration?
Yes.
Trying to blame, but kill the messenger. It's the media is bringing us more and more bad news. It's true, but it's bad news that's there. It's not the media's fault. In fact, quite the contrary, the media has been complicit in promoting all the disinformation we heard about the reasons for invading Iraq, and the media has not fulfilled its role in critiquing and criticizing government policy, which is the most important role of the media, and it still continues to pussyfoot around and to you know, act like a bunch of lapdogs. So to blame the media for anything except not doing their job is wrong in my view.
You've been in that area a lot. You've studied it. You've reported on it. Where do you see our role in Iraq right now? At what point of the game are we in right now?
We are at that point where we're getting near a tipping point in Iraq where I think at some point we're going to have to admit that we have are not going to attain our political or military goals in Iraq and begin pulling out of Iraq. The plans to set up a pro-U.S. puppet government that would be at our beck and call and be able to hand Iraq's oil over to American oil companies and is not working out. And the U.S. forces there are getting disillusioned and demoralized, and there's no end in sight. Most important of all, this Iraq and Afghanistan are costing us almost $10 billion a month, $10 billion a month, and we just can't go on paying that.
Now, that's about, what, 40 bucks a head for every man, woman, and child in America, close to it. You know, we went there. I know you've mentioned that we went to Iraq for two reasons. Number one, to grab Iraq's oil reserves and to turn them into a base to dominate the Middle East. And the other one was, to quote you, to destroy one of Israel's two main enemies. Have we succeeded at those two items?
Goal number one, no. The U.S. plans to turn Iraq into, somebody calls it, a military base on top of an oil field, which is a good analogy, have failed. We can't bring a political, a popular, national, stable political government in Iraq. It's just political chaos. And, in fact, the Iranians are gradually absorbing Iraq, no friends of the United States. So on the political side, which is why a country goes to war, it doesn't go to war to win military victories. It goes to achieve a political goal. We've failed totally. However, the neoconservatives in Washington who engineered this war have attained their goal, which is destroying a major enemy of Israel, which down the road, way maybe decade later, might have developed a nuclear weapon to challenge Israel's nuclear monopoly. So in this sense, that was a great success because Iraq has been fractured, and I don't think it's going to be put back together again.
Well, it seems like an expensive operation to do something that one might say Israel could have done themselves.
Well, the Israelis they leveraged the United States' power to do it. And we are seeing the same process being repeated again in Iran, which Israel and its supporters have always considered even a greater threat than Iraq, which, of course, it really was. And hence, now that we were seeing a complete repeat of the drum beating leading that led to the war of Iraq now happening with Iran.
Well, you know, during the first Gulf War, Bush 1 tried so hard, or, you know, it was reported that they did everything they possibly could to keep the Israelis from pulling the trigger when they started getting the missiles lobbed at them and so forth. Is it that dangerous a situation if Israel protected themselves and took on the Iraqis, the nuclear program themselves. I mean, are we looking at a catastrophic event if it was them instead of us? I mean, I see this already as a catastrophic event for America. But as far as the Middle East, would it have upset it that much?
It would, and Washington's always been keenly aware of the fact that any Israeli attack on an Arab country will rebound negatively on the United States. All the Arabs are going to blame, get mad at the Americans, and it'll hurt American interests, particularly oil interests in the Middle East. Just how far the Arabs can go being anti-American is a question, though. So far, they've acted pretty feebly, and they really haven't done anything too serious. But no doubt if the Israelis launched a war single-handedly against Iran, there would be major anti-U.S. repercussions right across the Middle East.
Can they defend themselves?
Absolutely. Israel has tremendous military power. It's one of the world's leading nuclear powers. It's got one of the world's biggest and best air forces and great, very capable ground forces. So Israel could not invade and occupy Iran, but it could certainly deliver very heavy air attacks on Iran, and if necessary, tactical nuclear strikes.
Yes, yes. Well, and they've over the years have shown the ability to do it and the desire to do it if called upon. I noticed you mentioned in your column, Sonny, about Operation Swarmer. I had an email from somebody that was actually there, a sergeant in the 101st. Let me know exactly what happened there last week in this Operation Swarmer. Said that it was known before they took off in the helicopters that it was going to be a PR stunt. Do you have any information other than that it was anything but that?
No, it was a PR stunt, and as I said in my Sunday column, I said it's a sign of both military stupidity and arrogance. Now, I speak as a former U.S. Army soldier who served during the Vietnam era. I wasn't in Vietnam, but I was in the Army then, and I've covered 14 wars since then. And these search and destroy missions are military stupidity. They're a sign of bankrupt policy. What happens is the U.S. does it for reasons to show that they're really making progress in the war. Washington wants action. General, get your men out there. And, of course, these operations take days to put together, and the U.S. employs all these Iraqi interpreters and cooks and drivers and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And probably half of them are working for the Iraqi resistance forces, and they telegraph the coming attack to everybody, and the forces are gone. It's exactly what happened in Vietnam, and that's why I said we're making the same stupid mistakes again.
You know, I started to smell a rat on that whole deal before I heard from my sergeant friend in the 101st. When Scott McClellan was asked the question in his daily press gaggle there did the president know anything about this ahead of time? And McClellan stood there and said, no, he didn't know a thing about it. This was a surprise to the president. I started to think, you know, wait a minute. I really doubt that because I smelled PR stunt from the beginning. It's hard to believe that the White House wouldn't have known about an operation that size.
Some patriots die for their country. Presidential spokesmen are paid to lie for their country.
Yeah, well, he works hard at it. I'll say that. I often look at those guys and say I wouldn't want their job.
I wouldn't either.
I don't think my sense of ethics would allow me to do their job.
I hope not.
What's the outlook? What do you see in the future of the U.S., the relationship between U.S. and Iraq and this cauldron over there?
Well, I just got back from the Mideast recently, and I've got to tell you that around the whole region outside, around Iraq, people are deathly worried. Iraq's neighbors are that Iraq is really dissolving into a civil war that can spread and infect their own countries, too, and it'll be a chaotic situation. The American invasion of Iraq is what's unleashed a civil war in Iraq, and we've played the sectarian card in politics by aligning ourselves with the Shiites, and now we're trying to ditch the Shiites and make nice to the Sunnis, and the Kurds, of course. So we've caused a lot of the trouble there, and I really think that the only solution to Iraq is for the U.S. to do a rapid withdrawal from Iraq, declare victory like we did in Vietnam. Remember, everybody said, oh, if you pull out, you're going to lose credibility. Everybody will be at your throats. Well, it was nonsense. We We left, we were humiliated, and a year later everybody forgot about it. That's exactly what I think we ought to do. A good general always knows when to retreat. Foolish generals, and Adolf Hitler wouldn't retreat from Stalingrad and saw his army destroyed. The U.S. is achieving nothing in Iraq at this point except getting our own soldiers killed and making the Arabs even angrier at us. So a withdrawal, let the Iraqis sort out their own mess. Throw it into the lap of the Arab League and say, Arabs, you go and sort out Iraq. And once that is all simmered down, then we'll come back and be friends again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've had an odd relationship with the folks in Iraq over the years, and it's troubling to say the least right now that it's costing us our young lives and our treasure. And obviously, from Bush's statement last week of how this is going to be in the hands of a future president, he sees it as not coming to an end during his administration.
Well, it's the first realistic statement I've heard from our president, and he's unfortunately, he's right in this, that if the U.S. continues its present policy, it is going to be stuck for the foreseeable future in Iraq, and it's going to be stuck paying for Iraq. Iraq has become a tar baby, as I and other critics predicted long before the 2003 invasion. Easy to get into Iraq, but it's going to be very, very hard to get out.
Well, let's talk about the Iraqis just for a moment. Let's say we do pick up and leave. What kind of a chaotic situation do you think it's going to be? That bad that it's just going to blow up and just destroy any infrastructure they do have in the country right now?
I don't. I mean, the country is in a state of civil war between the Sunnis and the Shias. The Kurds have gone virtually independent. This is a major problem that Iraq is going to have to face. The Kurds have gone independent with their oil wells up there, and they're acting as really as if they're not part of Iraq. So what the United States needs to do is to bring the Iraqi factions together and get them to start negotiating before it leaves.
Yeah.
And tell them, set a date, listen, on August 26th, we are pulling out of Iraq, and you better come to an agreement before that, or you're on your own. And, yeah, things would be worse initially. There would be more violence and chaos in Iraq, but eventually the Iraqis who've lived with each other for millennia will find a solution to sort out the situation.
Sure.
We can't solve their problems forever.
Yeah, I agree. I feel that way, too. Eric, it's been so good of you to be with us on the program today. It's always good to talk to you, to get a level-headed, experienced view of what goes on there. I did want to ask, any new publications on the horizon?
Well, I'm working on a new book about some of my adventures and misadventures in the Third World. It's called... working title now is Dinner with Papa Doc, Camping with Gaddafi, and Other Adventures in the Third World.
Oh, I can't wait. How soon, how far away are we from...
I don't have a publisher yet, so it'll be a little while, but I've written three chapters. It's moving ahead.
I can't wait to see that one. Eric Margulies, thank you so much for being a guest on our program today.
Truly a pleasure.
Great to talk to you.
Bye-bye.
There's a guy right there... that knows as much about what goes on in the Middle East as anybody you could find. Heavily experienced in that area. Been there many, many times. Lived with the people. Reported on the people. A very, very interesting man, Eric Margulies. And I go to ericmargulies.com. Check out his website, and you get a chance to read anything he writes. I know you're going to find it informative, often entertaining, and very, very insightful, almost always. We're going to go back to the phone. We've got Dave in California. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Guy. It is so good for this country to have you, your voice and thoughts back on the air.
Well, Dave, it's good to hear from you.
Yeah, well, I've missed you a lot. I wanted to have a... I don't know. You probably don't even have the connections that you can talk to you and a guest at the same time, but...
Well, we do, but Eric isn't with us anymore.
No, he's right.
We can do that, though.
Oh, that's great. Well, I'm much of the belief that we have no noble purpose whatsoever for being in Iraq. It is very, very profitable to some of the cons. They're shifting our treasury from the treasury into the pockets of this little Carlyle group, and it's just so profitable they don't want to ever leave there, and that's the way I'm reading this thing. If there's something more than that, I haven't heard it.
if there's something more than that, I'd like for him to prove it to us. Dave, I am in absolute agreement with you on that. I see no noble purpose to this whatsoever.
No, they invented the plan, oh, years ago. They were going to make their invasions in the Middle East and their axis of evil, and they even pointed out they would need their new Pearl Harbor to get the people to support it. They got their new Pearl Harbor.
Sure enough, it came along, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, they've tried to sell it as noble, though, haven't they?
Well, yes, of course. When they gave up the weapons of mass destruction, it was because Saddam's an evil guy, and now we want to bring peace and freedom to the Iraqis. We're killing 100,000 or more of them, and that's making more enemies for us than we could believe possible.
You know, Dave, it's hard to look at some of the video coming out of that country and see literally piles of bodies of innocent women and children, and it troubles me that our American leaders can look at something like that and pretty much know we caused it. And, you know, it's just... It breaks my heart. It really does.
Those who think we're going to win the hearts and minds of those people with flamethrowers and tank cannons and whatnot, I don't think you're putting a lot of thought into it. I loved your joke there about the robot bartender.
So, are you going to vote for Bush again? Well, that says it all, doesn't it?
It went a little too fast. You had to slow it down for him, I think.
Yeah. It's just it's a doggone shame that we're involved in this morass that's taking place over there now. We've got an administration that has and had admitted that they have no intention of leaving there while they're in office. It's troubling, and yet here we have Dave, the American public, pretty much listening to that yet last week when he said that'll be up to future presidents. We have the American public just kind of sitting by and going, oh, well, I don't know.
They thought it would last a few weeks initially, remember?
Yeah, a few weeks, all kinds of statements.
At the outside, maybe 6 months.
Oh, sure. Rumsfeld and Cheney both. 3 or 4 weeks, certainly no longer than a couple of months. And both of them said that. And the American public bought it.
He reiterated it in the debate with Kerry, but Kerry said, but of course you realize you're building 14 of the world's largest military bases and the world's largest embassy there. That's going to cause some people to think otherwise.
Right. Well, it's the worst mess since Vietnam, and I happen to think it could be just end up being just as bad as Vietnam. My God, I hope the death toll doesn't reach what it did in Vietnam, but as far as our standing on the world stage, I think it's damaged us immeasurably.
So good to have you back. Who do you plan to have as a guest on the voting machine?
We're not exactly sure yet. We're talking to 3 or 4 people. And if you have any suggestions, you drop me an email and let me know, and we'll do our best to get them.
All righty.
Dave, it's so good to hear from you.
And you too, brother.
Thank you.
Take care.
That's Dave, and if I'm not mistaken, he's like in Eureka, California. I'm not sure. Yeah, that's a beautiful area. And boy, lots of California folks today. It's good to hear from our folks out on the West Coast. Yeah, you know, we had this this deal last week. Well, here, I had this little poll here. They had a poll on CNN. Now, they got about 25,000, almost 26,000 votes on this last night. Do you agree with Charlie Sheen? I don't know what Charlie Sheen's got to do. I know he made a statement about it, but, you know, you've heard me say it before. I don't give a damn what the Hollywood actors say about all this stuff. I mean, they've got a right to their opinion, but I don't know why we should put any more weight on their opinions than anybody else's. I really don't know why that is, but I guess given the fact that this celebrity royalty we seem to have in this country, our fascination with Hollywood, that disturbs me. Anyway, get off on a tangent. Don't let me get started on that. It really bothers me that a lot of people know a whole lot more about what TV shows on, what movies out and all that than they do about our U.S. government. But do you agree with Charlie Sheen that the U.S. government covered up the real events of the 9/11 attacks? Yes, 81% said yes. Wow. 91%, 19% said no. That's, wow. That's all I can say is wow. That's amazing. 81% of the people think our government covered up the real events of 9/11. I'd like to go deeper into that poll and find out if there's more to it than that in people's minds. I really would. Well, why do they think we covered it up? Okay. Hey, we're going to pause for a short break right now. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Conservative Republican who believes George Bush did the right thing by invading Iraq, are you in agreement with Mr. Bush when he says we need to stay the course no matter how long it takes? Do you agree with the president when he says that he will never set any time schedule to pull out our troops? Well, if you agree with all of that, then you will certainly want to help out Mr. Bush by signing up your kids or grandkids for military service today. Yes, just call your local Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marine recruiter and tell them the age and Social Security number of your little Johnny or Susie and make an appointment for a free visit by your local military recruiter. We know that by supporting the president's war, you are a super patriot and you'll want to be the first on your block to offer up your kids for Mr. Bush's war. Don't worry if you think they're too young. Even if they're only 10 or 11 years old, this war will certainly last long enough for them to get involved. And for the first 15 callers, we're offering absolutely free a CD of the president uttering those famous words, "Bring 'em on." Yes, this CD will have special meaning to you, especially if your kid is wounded or killed in Iraq. So call now and get your child or grandchild registered today. Just call 1-800-TAKE-MY-KID. That's 1-800-TAKE-MY-KID.
And so, in my speech to the nation,
oh, God. Every time I hear that, I just have to wonder. In my state of the whatever you want to call it. Oh, boy. I don't know. Do have to wonder about that. Had some little extra music coming in there. That was my fault. I did that. Had some banjos in the background. Have a nice day. How are you doing today, Ryan?
I'm doing great. I've made some changes to the news a little bit. That's part of a little piece you folks can expect to hear more of later on this week as I'm finally getting around to putting some things together for the show here to make it sound better for us. So,
is there any truth to the rumor that you went up east and spent a couple of days with Walter Cronkite?
No truth at all.
No truth.
That rumor. I wish.
I was hoping there was. No. So you and him go out sailing and he could tell you all about the news business.
No.
Man, what I wouldn't give for a couple hours with Walter
Cronkite.
Just
a couple hours. Yeah.
You know, I'm always fascinated by people like him, and I think it was David Brinkley. You remember Huntley and Brinkley?
Yeah, sure, yeah. Absolutely.
David Brinkley was a great journalist, as far as I'm concerned, and he was talking about the difference between doing the news way back when he started. And I hope I've got this right. It was David Brinkley, but the news way back when he started and how it is today. He said when he was a young reporter, he went into the White House for a press briefing by Franklin Delano Roosevelt. First of all, he was awed that he was getting to go in the Oval Office because that's where they had him in those days. He went in the Oval Office and saw Franklin Roosevelt in a wheelchair. He did not know
before he
went in there that Franklin Roosevelt had been stricken with the polio or whatever.
Right.
He did not know it, and most of the public did not know it.
Right. Yeah.
Can you imagine trying to pull that off today?
Oh, that impossible.
Yeah,
there's no way.
I was always fascinated by that story. You just wouldn't, you know. And Franklin Roosevelt did everything he could possibly do to conceal that from the public. People always had a hold of his arm, or he had pictures in the car. And I went to Warm Springs, Georgia. And that's where he spent a lot of time, you know, in his off days. Everybody's got their little White House away from the White House, and his was kind of Warm Springs, Georgia. And I have to admit, I took pause when I stood there and watched. I believe he was having a portrait painted of him when he passed away, and that portrait's still there on an easel, and you know, the place where he died, the convertible that people saw him in so much, those items are all sitting there. And as I looked around, you know, you can feel you could feel the aura of Franklin Roosevelt in that place, a lovely place. And he brought a lot of children there as kind of a charity thing, and helped them with the effects of polio as well. Franklin Roosevelt, my favorite president, will always be my favorite president. Millions of people loved him, and millions of people hated him, but more loved him than hated him. That's a certainty. Ah, yes, we could go on and on and on about presidents. I've got my list that I like so much. In my office, I've got a picture of all my favorite presidents up on the wall. And they're all Democrats, except for two.
Oh, who are they?
And I've got them that way because I'm hoping someone, it's bait is what it is.
Oh, okay.
When someone goes by the office door and says, oh, I see you have a list of presidents up there. And I always say, this is all the great presidents. These are the people I see is great. These are the people I loved and admired as president. And I've got Woodrow Wilson up there. I've got Franklin Roosevelt. I've got Harry Truman, John Kennedy, Jefferson, Jackson, and those are all Democrats. Right. And I've got George Washington and Abraham Lincoln, who are not Democrats, of course.
Right.
Of course, and there's no question that if Abraham Lincoln were here today, he would be a Democrat.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been waiting for someone to walk by and say, well, where's the picture of Ronald Reagan? Because they didn't notice that they're all Democrats because
right.
they see. And the reason I put Washington and Lincoln up there was so that they wouldn't.
I think those are obvious on anybody's list anyways. Really.
And I've just been dying for someone to ask me that. And then I was going to tell them why Ronald Reagan wasn't up there, but no one's taken the bait yet.
Nobody's bit on that one.
I'm a little disappointed in that. I really am. I happen to think, I make people want to kill me for saying that, but I think Ronald Reagan was probably as much of a divisive president as anybody in our nation's history. He's not Saint Ronald Reagan in my book. Probably a nice guy. I don't know. Didn't know the man. But there are things that took place in his administrations, his 8 years, that were deeply troubling. Probably behind his back. I like to think that a lot of things went on behind his back. And I'll probably give Junior Bush, grudgingly, give him the benefit of the doubt that maybe some of these things happening today are behind his back as well, because he's not capable of understanding some of them. No, he's. I don't think he's capable of understanding a few of these things. I think there
that could be true.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that have happened in the White House, and the powers that be, and they went to Karl Rove and told Karl, and Karl said, "Hey, don't bother explaining that to Junior. He'll never understand it. I'll take care of it." I think that's what it is. So I don't know. There you have it. I have actually given Junior Bush the benefit of the doubt on an issue. I have done that. So. Someone used to call the show regularly. It was the guy that, he got us in trouble, actually. He dropped the F-bomb on us on live radio. Didn't really cause us any trouble. But call in and say, can't you say anything good about George Bush? Can't you, you just tear him apart all the time. Can't you say anything good about him? And I thought and I thought and I thought about it. And finally I said, I had my eureka moment. Yeah. He dresses well. He dresses very well. I hear his suits are $3,000-$4,000 suits, and his suits are always pretty snappy looking suits. So the guy dresses well, even when he's in his sweatsuits, when he goes out and rides his bike and falls down and busts his face, he has the nice looking sweatsuits on. So he dresses well, and there you go. That's it. I think he dresses well, so that's one for him. Definitely one for him. Well, hey, we're going to stop for the news right now. You're listening to the Guy James Show, and we'll be back in just a minute or so.
I'm Ryan Riles, updating you on your news for today. Sorry about the pause. In Iraq, a suicide bomber killed 40 people and injured another 30 at an army recruitment center near the city of Mosul this morning. And Shiite leaders are blaming the U.S. and Iraqi military forces for killing 22 people in attacks in an attack on a Shiite mosque in Baghdad. The U.S. military claims they were conducting house-to-house raids in the area that killed 16 insurgents. Elsewhere across Iraq, scattered sectarian violence killed another 21 people over the weekend. And the U.N. is now involved in the case of Christian convert Abdul Rahman of Afghanistan. U.N. spokesman Adrian Edwards says that the world body is planning on meeting with Afghan officials in an effort to end the situation peacefully. Rahman faces the death penalty in his native Afghanistan after it was discovered he had converted from Islam to Christianity. Congress has returned to session today after taking a week off for St. Patrick's Day. First thing on their agenda, tightening immigration laws. In a typical congressional fashion, members are at odds with each other over a part of the immigration bill that would make it illegal for charitable organizations to help out illegals. In further notes, across America this weekend, hundreds of thousands protested the proposed immigration laws. And in New Orleans, a federal judge today refused an injunction to delay the mayoral election scheduled there for April 22nd. Civil rights groups in the area wanted the election delayed for fear that not enough minorities would be able to participate due to the fact that many of them have been scattered across the country because of Hurricane Katrina. And on to your business news for today. No surprise here that gas prices have risen recently. Various media sources are reporting that gasoline has risen over 15 cents in the last 2 weeks, up to $2.50 a gallon for regular unleaded. This news has seemed to dampen the Dow Jones this afternoon, as the industrial average was down more than 27 points at the last check to 11,253, and the NASDAQ was up a little over 3 to 23,16. The S&P was down 1 to 13,02. And as Guy has asked me, he's asked me to look for a little fun thing to add to my newscasts, and I dug this little ditty up that kind of show the differences between America and other cultures. For our last little bit, authorities in New Delhi, India, are forcing a couple that's been married for 11 years to divorce after the husband muttered the word talak, which means divorce, 3 times in his sleep. Religious leaders there say this constituted a divorce under Islamic procedure, triple talak. The couple wishes to remarry. They must wait 100 days, according to religious leaders. Guy, could you ever see anything like that ever being possible or in America, where somebody just telling his wife he wanted a divorce and a judge granting it to him with no paperwork, nothing at all?
No. That's beyond comprehension. I don't know.
It was amazing. In his sleep, more or less. Didn't he? I wasn't even awake when he said it. He was in his sleep.
In his sleep.
Amazing. I came across this, and I remember what you said last week. I said, this fits perfectly.
Where was that at?
This is in New Delhi, India, actually. A democratic, relatively speaking, nation in the Islamic world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's actually it's the largest democracy in the world.
Right, a billion people, in fact.
Yeah, much bigger than the U.S. That's a good trivia question to get people on. The largest democracy in the world is India, and as is... United States is the third leading English-speaking country in the world. India, China, and then the U.S. There's more Chinese speak English than there are Americans.
Do they actually consider that as counting? I mean, because the official language of China is Mandarin Chinese.
Oh, so yeah. But there's just, everybody, so many of them learn to speak English that there are more of them that speak English than we do here in this country.
Okay.
So that would only be about a fourth of their population. Still,
right, yeah,
you know,
roughly. Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. Ryan, thanks for the news.
Yep, that's it for my news today, Guy. Back to you.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
Do you believe the things they told you?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody. Glad to have you along with us here on the Guy James Show. We've got another hour, one more hour to go here, and we're going to make it interesting for you. We've got Bob Furtick coming up in, I think about 15 minutes. About 10 minutes. Bob is the administrator of Democrats.com website, and he's leading this big impeachment drive that they've got, the censure and impeachment drive toward Mr. Bush. And I have told Bob that I am in his corner. I certainly hope that works out okay. I really do. We were talking last week about the Bush administration trying to make the press as the goat in this whole thing, that they haven't reported the good news enough, that they've been reporting nothing but the bad news. And bad news, bad news, bad news. Therefore, the perception they wanted to give the public is that this is all the fault of the press. Things would be going a lot better if it weren't for the press reporting nothing but bad news. Blah, 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 blah. I read an article, and I'll just read it to you. More violence was reported across Iraq, including a terrifying incident. Listen to this. A terrifying incident earlier in the week in the western city of Ramadi. On Wednesday, armed insurgents burst into the classroom of Qadir al-Mahalawi, I'm killing that name, an English teacher at Sajaria High School. They accused him of being an agent for the CIA and Israeli intelligence, and they beheaded him in front of his students, according to students, fellow instructors, and a physician at the local hospital. Now, the author says, but the school in question had, of course, been freshly repainted. Let's not lose sight of what's really really important here. Yeah, the school had been repainted. Which was the big news? And why aren't we hearing all the stories of all the teachers who have not been beheaded in front of their students? Liberal media bias, of course. And then we had Laura Logan on CNN the other day. I mean, who says things aren't falling apart in Iraq? I mean, you didn't see on your screens this week. What you didn't see on your screens this week was all the unidentified bodies that have been turning up. All the allegations here of militias that are really controlling the security forces. I'm quoting Laura Logan on CNN. What about all the American soldiers that died this week that you didn't see on our screens? I mean, we've reported on reconstruction stories over and over again. I mean, I really resent the fact that people say we're not reflecting the true picture here. That's totally unfair, and it's really unfounded. She goes on to say, our own editors back in New York are asking the same things. They read the same comments. You know, are there positive stories, their editors ask? Can't you find them? You don't think that I haven't been to the U.S. military and the State Department and the embassy and asked them over and over again, let's see the good stories, show us some of the good things that are going on? And they say, oh, sorry, we can't take you to that school project because if you put that on TV, they're going to be attacked. The teachers are going to be killed. The children might be victims of an attack. This is the answer the reporters are getting. So she says, sorry, we can't show this reconstruction project because then it's going to expose it to sabotage. And the last time we had journalists down here, the plant was attacked. I mean, security dominates every single thing that happens in this country. So how is it the security issues should not then dominate the media coverage coming out of here? She also gave Laura Ingraham a good swift kick in the pants about her hotel balcony remark. She said, it's ridiculous that anyone in our media is entertaining the notion, seriously, the charge that they're underreporting all the great stuff that's happening in Iraq. As someone who's experienced the civil, understands that while life goes on in the midst of such things, the news, not the they left out some words here. Life goes on. It's that 30 people were beheaded. That was the news. You know, that's going to be the news. Absolutely, it's going to be the news. It's just, I don't know. I just thought, do you think they were successful? I'd like to hear from you if you think the press was, or the administration was successful putting the blame over on the media. I mean, they've tried. They've tried very, very hard. You know, the fact that life goes on in Iraq, even during a violent occupation, really, no matter what you want to say, it doesn't mitigate the death and destruction that makes Iraq a daily story of almost unimaginable terror. You know, Bush and his minions would like to make Americans believe it does, but it isn't true. And all we have to do is imagine, if we would agree that a new school being opened in St. Louis was newsworthy on a day when 30 people were killed while shopping at the Safeway down the street and four Catholic churches around the country were blown up. It's the violence, stupid. You know, until that stops, there is no good news. And that's exactly what's happening I almost said Vietnam. That's exactly what's happening over in Iraq right now. There's 100 times more bad news than there is good news. And what do you expect out of the press? What would any self-respecting member of the press do? Just forget those stories? I mean, it's absurd. And yet, you know, you've seen it this past week. They did their damnedest. Oh, they did their damnedest to try and put the blame over on the voice people, or on the media. And with a lot of people, they actually got away with it. They really did get away with it. I've heard those remarks parroted all over TV on all the shows. Yeah, the media, nothing but bad news, you know. Oh, well. Oh, well. Hey, we've got our guest. We've got Bob Furtick on the phone now. Bob runs a great website, Democrats.com, and he's leading a fight right now to get Mr. Bush impeached or censured. Bob, are you with us?
Pleasure to be with you.
Well, we're awfully glad to have you with us on the show today. A fine website, and anybody listening, if you haven't been to Democrats.com, you must not know your way around the Internet very well. You certainly want to go visit Democrats.com and Bob's blog on there. He keeps us informed on a lot of these issues. The reason I wanted to talk to you today, Bob, was about this impeachment drive, and it's a serious drive you've got going. I wonder if you'd tell us a little about it.
Sure, I'd be delighted. We started last November. We created something called Impeach PAC, which is a political action committee, and we're raising money for pro-impeachment candidates. We've endorsed three candidates so far, and we've raised over $60,000 from grassroots donors on the Internet. We're also working with grassroots activists around the country to introduce impeachment resolutions in town councils and Democratic Party committees. We've had a number in Vermont and in California and in New Mexico and Wisconsin, and it's spreading around the country. It's really becoming a powerful grassroots movement.
Bob, what do you say to people who, you know, they look at this whole situation about censure and impeachment and all that and say, hey, that's not productive. Let's move on. Let's be nice little boys and girls, and let's just move on, and let's not behave like the Republicans did when they impeached Clinton. What do you say to those folks?
Well, impeachment is the only method under the Constitution for removing a high elected official for committing high crimes. And, you know, it's used for judges. It's used for other high officials. It is the only way we can remove George Bush and Dick Cheney from the White House. They have committed innumerable crimes. People know what those crimes are. They lied us into a war in Iraq. They committed torture in Iraq. They condoned torture. They spied on innocent American law-abiding citizens. We don't even know how many, but we know it's a lot. They've admitted doing this. They claim to be above the law. Their conduct is far worse than anything that Richard Nixon was impeached for.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree on that count. You know, I'm just dismayed when I see a lot of the Democrats right now. You know, our friend Joe Lieberman, for one, not wanting to you know, I don't find anybody in Congress who thinks we ought not be listening to the phone. He thinks this is a good program as a matter of policy. And he just outright says they probably violated the law, but oh well. And I see the Democrats just, you know, they're all in that camp. Well, we better not say too much. You know, we don't want to look really bad in the eyes of the Republicans. You know, we see that, and that's the reason you're backing some candidates who obviously have some cojones.
Well, that's right. The rank and file of the Democrats, the average Democrats, are running away from accountability. We have a censure motion that Russ Feingold introduced, and only two senators, Barbara Boxer and Tom Harkin, have been willing to sign on to this. This is an open and shut case. Censure is a mild solution. It's just a rebuke. It's not removal from office. Every Democrat and every Republican ought to be supporting it. Bush admits he broke the law. You know, how many of us lived through the Clinton impeachment, and the mantra throughout that impeachment was the rule of law?
Oh, yes.
That was it. That was what the whole thing was about. I mean, nobody, you know, they insisted that it wasn't about sex. It wasn't about his affair with Monica Lewinsky. It was the fact that he lied grand jury testimony, and that it didn't matter what he lied about, the mere fact that he lied. Well, if the rule of law is what is sacrosanct in this country, then George Bush deciding he does not have to obey the laws because he doesn't want to cannot be condoned. Every member of Congress should be censuring and impeaching this man.
Absolutely. And you know, I read this story about Joe Lieberman. He's saying we ought not do this, and let's just let this go, and let's make the program, the policy, let's make it legal that he has to get the search warrant and so forth. And yet, during the... even after Clinton was acquitted, Joe thought that censure was needed to heal the divisions in our nation at that time. So here we are having saying that back then, but now a completely different answer. I'm mystified by this.
Well, that's why Ned Lamont is going to beat him in a primary. The people of Connecticut know that Joe Lieberman has personal affection for George Bush. We have pictures of them hugging and kissing, and it's a personal thing. And he supports Bush's agenda. He supports the war enthusiastically. He doesn't want to challenge Bush. He supports Bush. He's not a Democrat. He's a Republican. Supports the neoconservative agenda to create a global empire where our sons and daughters are going to go fight around the world to, you know, control the world's oil. That's what Joe Lieberman supports. And we, the Democratic base, are not going to put up with that. We're going to replace those kinds of Democrats with true Democrats.
Well, you know, Bob, we had the president of a large Democratic club here in Florida on earlier today, and he was talking about how the Democratic clubs in the states and the grassroots people need to consolidate power and perhaps put the heat on our elected officials, you know, that have the power to do so, instead of all the power being and the money being up at the top with the DNC, that maybe the grassroots organizations ought to take it upon themselves to band together and show some political clout. And I think that's probably what you're up to there. Are you getting plenty of donations for it?
Oh, sure we are. Impeach PACs raised over $60,000 from over 1,600 individual donors. We're working with groups like PDA, Progressive Democrats of America, not just to raise money, but to build chapters, build grassroots Democratic chapters of Progressive Democrats. We need to take over the party. We need to take over local party committees and replace the people who sit on those committees but don't do anything and don't support anything, and replace them with people who are activists who are going to go out and register voters and win elections and promote progressive policies. That's what we need to do.
You know, Bob, I agree so much with you, and I know you hear the same things I do. I get out and I speak quite a bit, and I talk to many, many Democrats, and I hardly ever hear from a local Democrat that doesn't want to do the, you know, get on with it with the impeachment or even a censure and get these bums out of office. And yet, up at the top, you know, they're tongue tied. They don't want to say anything. It's just, we know, and I know you know, and I know, that it's got to be way up in the high percentages, 80-90% of Democrats want some action taken about this illegal administration.
Oh, yeah, it's overwhelming. But it's not just Democrats. There's about half of independents and about a third of Republicans support censure or impeachment. It cuts across the board. We've got a president whose approval rating down around 33-34%. I mean, that's the only, you know, the only comparison with that is Richard Nixon as he was heading towards his own impeachment. There's no support for George Bush outside the base, and when we get through with this impeachment, with this immigration debate this week, which is dividing the Republican Party right in half, Bush's support's going to be down below 30. I mean, he's going straight down. The American people of all political persuasions, you know, what he said last week when he said we're going to be, our soldiers are going to be in Iraq past the end of his term. I think people were shocked to hear that. You know, he created this mess. The least he can do is clean it up and get us out of there.
Oh, yeah. I for one, was blown away. I mean, I've always thought it was going to be a future president, but to hear him admit that was shocking to me. It really was.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons for impeachment is people, you know, think, well, we can wait it out. Well, we can't wait it out. Every day that goes by is another disaster in Iraq, and it's another disaster at home. So we can't wait 3 more years for George Bush's term to run out. We've got to get him out of office now, him and Cheney. We've got to replace them with a new team, a new staff, and start enforcing the laws that this country is based on.
Yep, if you're going to get rid of weeds out in your yard, you pull the roots up, too. You're exactly right. They need to start at the top and pull the roots out as well. It's a sad state of affairs, and that in order to get this done, and you know and I know the stance of a lot of our elected Democrat officials, we're going to have to drag some of them kicking and screaming into this fray if we do take the House back. There's going to be quite a few of them say they don't want anything to do with it. They've got short memories, I guess.
Yeah, they don't want conflict with the White House because, you know, the White House controls the media. So we know how they're going to fight back. George Bush is doing it already with Russ Feingold. They just make up lies. They run commercials. They smear the guy. He's not calling for an end to wiretapping of al-Qaeda. He's calling for an end to wiretapping of innocent American citizens. But they distort the issues, they lie, and the American people don't have enough time to do the research to understand the truth. Democrats are afraid to go up against the White House, up against Karl Rove, and so they sit back and do nothing. Well, doing nothing is not a winning strategy. If they want to win in November, they've got to show the voters that there's a reason to vote for them, that they're going to get the change that they want. The American people want change. 70%, they were going in the wrong direction. So the Democrats need to say, yes, we are going to change the direction, the disastrous direction that the Republicans have pointed us in.
Oh, and if they think for a moment, if any of these Democrats, if Joe Lieberman thinks that the White House wouldn't swift boat him if they had to, he's badly mistaken to associate with these guys and help them out in the, well, thinking that maybe they'll be nice to you in the future. That's a joke. That's not going to happen.
Oh, I think the graveyard is littered with the bodies of Democrats who thought they could be exempt from punishment if they cooperated. They just turn on everybody.
Exactly. Well, Bob, I wish you a lot of success with this, and of course we're going to keep up on it in the program. We'll probably have you back again if you like to talk more about it. And I hope this is a snowball effect. I hope we just keep picking up more and more people as that ball rolls. And I don't see why it shouldn't happen. And I know we got a good guy running it, and you. And I'm very, very pleased that someone is really taking the bull by the horn and working on this issue as you are. I thank you so much for being on the program. I read your site every day. I think everybody should. Democrats.com, a great site. A lot of good articles on there. And Bob Furtick, thanks so much for being on the program today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, there are many Democrats with a yellow streak right down the middle of their backs. And that's, oh, no, I don't want to do anything to offend the president, you know, because if I'm nice to the president and those people, well, maybe they'll treat me nice. So, you know, just like he said, the political graveyards are littered with the bodies of Democrats that thought they would, do the president's bidding and then have him swift boat him and get him right out of office. That's so Joe Lieberman, he was all for censuring Clinton after the impeachment in order to bring healing to the country, but he can't bring himself to bring censure on a president who has admitted admitted lying. He's admitted it. He's admitting that he broke the law on this. He's admitted it. You know, whether you think it's a good policy or not, you know, that's the thing a lot of people have got to sort out here. There's policy, and then there's the law. And it might be, you might think it's good policy. I personally don't. But I can understand, try and understand at least how some of you might think it's that this illegal spying is good policy. Oh, my God, we'll spy on you. You know, you don't have anything to worry about if you're innocent. And, you know, you've all heard that. Okay, you believe that if you want to. But here's a group of people that back when Bill Clinton was office and in office, and I know you just heard Bob say it, and that saying that just, oh, the rule of law, Henry Hyde and his folks, the rule of law. You heard it over and over and over again. It was their mantra, the rule of law, the rule of law. And here we have a law that's very obviously been broken. There is little question about it. Legal scholars from all over the country are absolutely convinced that they broke the law on this. I don't think there's any question about it. You know, you can argue about policy. You really can. Well, maybe this is right, maybe it isn't, but laws are more definitive than policy. Much more definitive than policy. The laws are on the books. They're written down. They're detailed. They're nuanced to fit almost every situation nowadays. Some would say we have too many laws, and I would agree. But there's no question the law's been broken on this. None. And yet we have a guy like Joe Lieberman. So somebody sent me this, from Digby, actually, this little story. Bear with me on this little story. Joe Lieberman's little 8-year-old grandkid asked him at the dinner table the other night if he thought the president broke the law, like the kids at school said he did. Is he going to get in trouble, the grandchild asked. No, son, Lieberman replied. We're just going to change the law so that what he did isn't illegal anymore. We don't want his friends to get upset. Neat, the kid replied. I took 4 candy bars from 7-Eleven after school, and the man said he was going to call the police. Can you change the law for me so I won't get in trouble either? Lieberman looked indulgently at the naive little pup and said, I'm sorry, son. You're the grandson of a Democrat. You shall have to pay the price for your misdeeds. Breaking the law and having a private personal life is okay if you're a Republican. But only if you're a Republican. It's time that you learned that, grandson. So, ain't it the truth? And it absolutely the truth. But here we have supposedly one of our own, Holy Joe Lieberman. Joe Lieberman, in my opinion, don't get me started. I think he's the biggest mistake Al Gore ever made. When he picked Joe Lieberman as his vice presidential, his running mate, I was shocked. I knew why he did it and all, but my God. We had all these great Democrats you could have picked, and you picked this guy. He might be a nice guy, all that. I don't know. I have no idea, but I certainly have no use for his political philosophy. None whatsoever. If he's just not a Democrat. There's no way around it. He is not a Democrat. And he's given us evidence on this issue that he loves to talk out of both sides of his mouth. And I don't like that. I don't like that at all. Hey, we're going to pause for a break. We'll be back after a couple of words.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I wanna be just like my president. I wanna make more money than I can spend. I wanna build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Come all you black and Hispanic boys, we'll keep you poor so you got no choice but to join the army in your prime and fight for Uncle Sam and die. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century.
Oh, yeah. I love that piece of music. I do. I'm going to play it every once in a while just simply because I like it. And I kind of know the guy a little bit that did it. And Sputnik Weasels is a professional name. I think that's a great professional name. I don't know that I'd use it, but for him, it seemed, if you knew him, why you'd think, well, that's a good name for him.
Sputnik
Weasel.
Weasel.
Yeah.
And I'm a generation removed of you, and to me, that's weird. Sputnik, yeah, a Russian space probe and a rodent.
Yeah. Well, got to admit.
That's like that whole game, how do you know what your porn name would be? You know, throw your first pet's name with the first street name you lived in together, you know?
Well, you have to admit, there's nothing else like it on the market.
No, nothing at all.
I mean, I've heard, I'm from back in the generation when, well, there's a, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but there's a lost, in my humble opinion. There was a lost generation musically in this country.
Okay.
And it was the 70s.
You're going to get bombarded for this.
I am. And people are going to hate me saying this. Your Buffalo Springfield, your Strawberry Alarm Clock, the groups like that I used to listen to those and go, oh, no. I kind of dropped out for a while.
But what about your Jimi Hendrix, your Earth, Wind, and Fire, your Lynyrd Skynyrds, and your...
I was not a Hendrix and Skynyrd fan.
You weren't a fan of those bands of the 70s?
No.
Or Rush or any of the good rock music from that whole?
No, I'm more the kind of guy that went for ABBA. You know, I like
disco?
Them. I like that. No, not disco. No. ABBA wasn't disco.
Come on, guy. You don't think ABBA wasn't disco to you?
No, they were before disco.
Truly. I don't know.
No, they were before disco. I wouldn't call them disco.
Let the hate mail commence. That's all I have to say.
that's a fact. There's probably somebody sitting, probably a member of Buffalo Springfield sitting out there listening right now. Says, how can he say that about our group or Strawberry Alarm Clock? Or I can't remember all those weird names that used to come up with back in those days, but there certainly were. Plenty of them.
Well, they were all on drugs. They had to be weird names. I mean, they weren't sober, that's for sure. When they
certainly all of them weren't, but I'd say you're right. A pretty high percentage.
Percentage. I mean, we all know, like the Doors, he didn't write one song sober.
Wonder how sober Keith Richards was by the time.
Never.
I heard him the other day answer a question to somebody, and I swear I have no idea what he said. I have no idea, what's his name?
I don't think you're alone, though.
Oh, what's the people that had the show on TV recently, the rock star and his family?
In Excess?
No, you know, no. Hey. Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh.
Anyway, they interviewed Ozzy Osbourne, and Ozzy was going, and then they went into Keith Richards, and I just sat there after it was over, and what did they say? Either one of them.
What did you just say? Right?
And I think a better question is, do they know what they said?
Maybe not. Maybe not. It could be quite possible, and no, they don't.
You know, Oz, he's a lovable character.
Yes.
He really is, but... is it an act, or is he really fried?
You know, I've had an opportunity to meet him briefly on one occasion, and he's fried.
Oh,
he's fried.
He really is fried.
He does. He spent way too much of his 20s and 30s doing hardcore drugs, not just smoking a little marijuana or, but hard drugs, you know, coke and heroin and acid and drinking and. I met him briefly, very briefly. I met him, was able to say hello to him and listen to a in on a conversation he was having with somebody, and it was radio related. And he's fried. He's 120%.
Well, you know, I read these stories about some of those guys, and you know, I was always a little bit of a performer. I used to do some singing and so forth, and you know, you get the old stage fright and all that, and you go out and do your performance, and you hope it turns out well and all. But you know, you read the stories of these guys, you know, drinking a bottle of Jack Daniels and doing coke and everything else before they went on the stage. And I'm thinking, geez, how did they do that?
They do it though.
Oh, I mean, I you know
they do it.
Oh. I was careful about not drinking a Coke before I went out on the stage. You know, no carbonated beverage. And here they are slugging whiskey and pills. And
well, it becomes habit once they start doing it when they're 16, 17. They start drinking because they're playing in a bar and they're too young to be in there. But they're there. They start drinking. And they can. I didn't believe it for a long time either. But once you get into that scene, as I've been a part of that whole scene at a point in my life, they do it. I don't know how.
Well, I never was a drinker. I enjoy to drink now and then, and I probably still would now and then, but I never was really a drinker. And, you know, once in a while I'd have a little wine or a beer now and then or something, but there was always, almost all the time, and 99.9% of the time, there was just that little guy up on my shoulder when you'd be having a few drinks. They'd say, okay, that's enough, guy. No more. That's enough. And it wasn't anything... It wasn't anything because it was a moral issue of any kind. It was the little guy up there on the shoulder knew if you cross over this line, you're going to get sick as a dog.
Knew what was coming.
Yeah, and so that I don't know. That was just kind of built into me as somehow, and I'm thankful for that.
I'm the same way. I'm thankful for it too. I mean, I've been there before, of course, but I'm not that way either. I'm glad I'm not.
Well, speaking of weird stuff. I think what we're going to do right now, if I can get the orchestra available, we're going to do a few minutes of Republican love. Yes. Keep those cards and letters coming, boys and girls. We love to get them. I've had to edit them just a bit. I don't want to offend the sensibilities of some of our listeners.
Don't edit these. These are... They are priceless works of
art. You don't know. You don't know.
You don't mess with a priceless work of art.
Well, we're going to get started. Here we go. Mr. James. Now that's respect right
that's
there.
Respect.
Starting off with respect.
That's
I listened to your show a couple of times this past week, and I have to say that I don't think I've ever heard anyone speak so unkindly about our president.
Well, I'll turn on the TV. Jeez.
Oh. President Bush may... I love this one. President Bush may have made a mistake or two.
One or two.
But all in all, he's been a champion for our nation. A champion of what? he exemplifies all that is good and decent about our country, and I, for one, am, and they put this in caps, very proud of him. If we could somehow have President Bush around for another decade or so, I believe the world would be a much better place. Oh, God.
I have a response for that gentleman.
He is here. You go. He is a shining example of morality to our children and to adults alike. Oh, sure. If you want to teach your kids how to lie to people and smirk while doing it, then Bush Jr. is your man. All right. And he goes on to say, "Oh, this is from a she. This is a man of God, and since we know, oh no, don't go there. Oh no.
Where'd they go, guys?
Oh no.
Where'd they go?
And I quote." He is a man of God, and since we know God speaks to him, then we should trust his judgment, since his words are the words of God spoken through him.
Since when did the president become a prophet?
How can you argue that God isn't doing what's right for our nation? We are one nation under God, and there's no doubt that since we are the most godly nation on earth, that we are being highly favored with many blessings by God. The song says, God bless America, not God bless Russia or Iran. God has forsaken those nations because of their anti-Christian bias. In closing, oh, this is good.
Boy.
In closing, I just want to remind you that God is listening to every word you say, and someday you will be stricken by his mighty sword if you do not stop your blasphemous behavior against our president, Mary Schuster. Mary, thank you for that. I have to get a Kleenex.
No, we were just talking about drug usage from the 70s. Yeah, there's some hallucinogenics going on there.
You think, Mary, you got a couple of lines on the table there?
Oh, she's got it. No offense, Mary, but anybody who compares our president to essentially a prophet of God.
Yeah, he's a prophet of God there. Anyway, we're gonna go to the next letter. Dear Traitor Guy James.
Ooh, you're a traitor now.
Yes, traitor. You are a modern-day Benedict Arnold. He spelled Benedict wrong, but anyway. You should be cooling your heels in the federal prison in Leavenworth, Kansas.
Ooh.
Now, that's interesting. That's an interesting point, because I have been in the federal prison in Leavenworth, Kansas. Because,
oh, really?
Yes, my uncle Jim, and it's a true story, was one of the administrators in that prison.
Oh, no.
And he lived in Leavenworth, he took us around that facility a couple of times.
Yeah.
Anyway, he says, guys like you are all talk and no action. I just wish you would have the guts to tell people where you live. But don't worry, we will find you. That's from Anonymous. Well, that's a pleasant thought, Anonymous, and thank you for being brave and signing Anonymous. But yeah, in Leavenworth, Kansas, an interesting place.
Yeah.
Every prison that you can name is in Leavenworth, Kansas. The women's, in fact, it was. I don't know if it is anymore. But the men's state prison, the women's state prison, the boys' reformatory, the girls' reformatory, and the federal prison, all in Leavenworth, Kansas. The whole town was a big prison. Yeah.
A big prison. Okay.
All right, here's another letter. Now, the salutation on this one leaves a little bit to... Dear Peckerhead.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't worry, I'm not going to call you because you are enough of a coward that you'd find out my phone number and call the cops on me. You can't trace an email, though, Mr. Pinko.
If we wanted to, we could.
Au contraire, yes, we can. We have ways.
Yes.
You are a communist, a socialist, and an example of the worst kind of rat bastard the U.S. has to offer.
I'm going to have to change the title of my news now.
Keep your filthy talk about President Bush to yourself. You are the perfect example of the damn Yankees we all hate here. Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
Oh, some
yeehaw.
Rebel, some rebel love.
Oh, yeah. Looking, but that pick-em-up truck's got that big 10-foot rebel flag flying in the back.
Got some
the big mud tires and everything. You come down here and ruin our lives and then complain about everything. It's our state, and someday we're going to take it back from you Yankee a-holes. Okay. Can't wait to see you. Whatever that means. Frank. That's from Frank.
Frank. Okay.
I don't know. Where are you supposed Frank might be from? I don't know. Anyway, here we go again. Sir, President Polk lied about a war.
He did.
As I recall, it was about Mexico.
Yeah, he did.
William McKinley lied about a war. Cuba and the Philippines. Yeah. Philippines wasn't actually a war. Woodrow Wilson lied about a war. I don't know if I'd agree about
that. Shaky, but,
John Kennedy lied about a war. I don't know. Lyndon Johnson lied about a war. That would be the Gulf of Tonkin, I'm pretty sure he's talking about there. Richard Nixon lied about a war, and that would probably be the Cambodian bombing. Ronald Reagan lied about a war.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, Grenada. Mm-hmm. Bush 1 lied. He had two. He had Panama.
And he had Iraq.
And now Bush 2 has lied about a war. Knowing all of this, just why are you picking on just Bush? Oh, I don't know.
Because he's the current president.
Maybe because we can't do a damn thing about about the war against Mexico.
No kidding, really.
Maybe we can get the needless deaths of our soldiers and innocent Iraqis stopped. If maybe we have informed the public about the truth of these matters.
I think the point he might be getting to their guy is it's what a president does. They lie, I guess. I mean, he failed to mention Bill Clinton, who essentially didn't lie about Kosovo and the things revolving.
He didn't say that. I don't agree with you on that.
He certainly failed.
I don't think he lied about that one. If you were the patriot you claim to be, you wouldn't disparage the name of our chief executive the way you do. Well, if I didn't expose Bush for what he is, I feel I would be a traitor to my nation if I didn't expose him. So there you go. We'll have to just agree to disagree on that. But there you have another segment of, I got tears in my eyes. I do. Wow. Anyway, we're going to pause for just a moment, so don't go anywhere.
The National Convention of Wussies for War is now convened. All rise for the anthem. We love a good invasion.
It doesn't matter why.
'Cause a really good invasion
can be based upon a lie.
For a lie is patriotic. What's the problem? What's the fuss?
Why should we care who's gonna die?
As long as it's not us.
That's why we're wussies for war. Wussies for war. We don't even know what the war is for, but we will expedite it if somebody else will fight it, 'cause we're gung-ho.
We won't go wussies for war.
Line up, sign up, join us today. Make a lot of noise about the USA. Act like you care. But when they need you over there, run away, run away, run away, run away.
Because we're wussies for war, wussies for war. We don't even know what the war is for, but we will expedite it if somebody else will fight it. Wussies for war.
How do you spell it? How do you spell it?
W-U-S-S-I-E-S. W-U-S-S-I-E-S.
Chicken hawk. Chicken hawk.
W-U-S-S-I-E-S, W-U-S-S-I-E-S, W-U-S-S-I-E-S.
Repeat after me. I am a young Republican.
I am a young Republican.
W is my man.
W is my man.
I love my fat portfolio.
I love my fat portfolio.
I suck up when I can.
I suck up when I can.
Money is my Bible.
Money is my Bible.
Torture is my friend.
Torture is my friend.
I pray all day to Jesus that he will never send me to Baghdad.
Don't you
send me to Baghdad.
Don't you
send me to Baghdad.
No, not Baghdad.
Don't send me to Baghdad. Dad,
run, 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 run,
run. Mr. President, please.
Wussies for war, wussies for war. We don't even know what the war is for, but we will expedite it if somebody else will fight it. Or come home, we won't go wussies for war.
Now let me introduce the choir. Up in the bass section with a hood over his head, we have Donald Rumsfeld. Next to him, Brother Cheney. Then, of course, two rows of castrati with Tom DeLay and Bill Frist. Newt Gingrich and Jeb Bush. Trent Lott, John Ashcroft, Paul Wolfowitz, Clarence Thomas, Carl Rove, Dan Quayle, Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, Rudolph Giuliani, Rush Limbaugh, and all the best Republicans. Pogo, everybody, pogo.
Wussies for war, wussies for war. We don't even know what the war is for, but we will expedite it if somebody else will fight it, 'cause we're gung-ho. We won't go wussies for war. Hey, wussies for war.
Ah, wussies for war. I don't think that's going to make the top 40, but anyway, wussies for war. You know, we were talking here recently. There should be no shortage of and I know there is, the recruitment is not meeting their goals, and I don't understand why not, because I should think every patriotic Republican would be, you know, taking their kid. You got a kid of military service age, take his ass down to the recruiter. You would, wouldn't you? I mean, you would, if this war is so wonderful and just and righteous. Yeah. If you're a Republican, get your kid down there. Yeah. Although we do see that now that 72% of the soldiers are thinking this ought to be over with any day now. That's what they're thinking, new Sugby poll. Hey, we're going to go to the phone. Who do we have on the phone, Ryan?
We got Greg calling from Connecticut, and actually I thought it was 75% guy that I saw.
Well, maybe so. Maybe so. I'm not sure. Hi, Greg. Are you with us?
Yeah, I'm with you. First guy, I'm sorry that I missed your first week on the air. I was in that terrorist-loving Paris for a week, so I missed your show for a
week.
But, you know, but actually it's pretty good because, you know, I've told many Republicans it's good that they don't like Paris because it's nice to have Paris Republican-free, and I wish we could make more countries and cities be like that, you know, too.
You know, I've never been there, and I would like to go.
Yeah, oh, it's nice, and I was there during the so-called student riots, you know, that the press made so much of. They, you know, one thing CNN said that a McDonald's had been annihilated, and I went down there the next morning, and it was perfectly fine, you know, so what are you going to do?
That's right.
But anyway, you were talking a little bit about our beloved Senator Joe Lieberman, and I just thought I'd tell you a little bit that I've been working as I can on the Ned Lamont campaign, and that's been going really well, and, you know, I think that there's a lot of people that are really opening their eyes about Joe, and there was a paper, there was an article today from New Haven about how Joe was getting a mighty bit irate about this whole thing, and you know he snapped at this reporter last week on Connecticut radio saying that he was misquoted and he's misunderstood and everything, and you know he's having these ridiculous photo ops with, you know, labor unions and things like that. So I think we're making Joe a little bit nervous.
Oh, so now he's a Democrat.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
He's a Democrat. Yeah, 3-4 months before the election, he's a Democrat, you know.
I see. We get the union boys out and appear with them. I get it. All right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, anyone with half a brain is not fooled, you know. But you know, as I get the envelopes from Connecticut Democrats, I always write on it, not a dime as long as you support Joe. So maybe eventually they'll get the message. I don't know. But you know, I think, you know what I think the method of Joe's madness is? And maybe I'm completely insane. I think he has this idea in his head that McCain's going to be the candidate, and McCain's going to pick him to appear nice and moderate. You know, and I wouldn't put that past Joe either to be his running mate.
Wow.
Maybe that's crazy.
I hadn't thought of that. You know, there was that rumor swirling around a while back that Cheney was going to resign and they were going to put Lieberman in as vice president then. Thank God. Not, well, I don't know.
I don't think they would ever. They don't trust Lieberman enough to do that. This administration, like you said, they would turn on Lieberman in a dime. And that's the problem with most of these Democrats. You know, when we're talking about the Scalito vote, you know, for cloture and stuff like that, a lot of the so-called Democrats didn't do it because they're so afraid, well, I live in a red state and everything like that. But you know the very next opportunity, they're going to go after him anyway. I mean, look at Mary Landrieu in Louisiana. Does she really think if she plays ball, they're going to give her funding for Louisiana, for New Orleans? It's a joke.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
That's true. It's just not going to happen. What do you think about the election going on up there? What do you see? Where are we at?
Well, you know, I'd love to tell you, you know, it's going to be a shoe-in and Ned Lamont's going to win with no – I mean, it's going to be a struggle, and I don't know. I mean, all I can say is that, you know, he's getting thousands and thousands of people expressing interest. He's gone from corner to corner of the state, and everywhere he goes, he's met with real interest. And I think the biggest problem he has is that just a lot of people don't know who he is, and I think a lot of people don't know what Joe's positions are. I mean, Joe has had a history that going back to the beginning of his career that's been pretty questionable, you know?
Well, let me ask you, and I'm ashamed that I don't know this, but do you have an open primary there?
No. In Connecticut, we don't, thank God.
Okay. Yeah, so thank God. That would really be against you.
Yeah, because I think you have to be for at least a year. I mean, I'm not that up on it, but I know that you do have to be in your registered party to vote. So that's going to be helpful. You know, so it just depends on how it goes. And also, in a primary, you have really low turnout. So it's all going to come out down to who gets out to vote, you know. So, you know, Joe, he's going to do a lot of these staged events, you know. And of course, Dodd is too cowardly to stand up and say, you know, no, this isn't right. You know, I mean, Dodd's a lot more of a Democrat than Lieberman is, but he says, no, Joe's a good friend, and how could we have this costly primary and this and that, you know. And that's a problem with so many Democrats in all over the country. You know, look at Robert Byrd. I mean, I adored the man until he voted yes on Alito, you know.
Yeah.
He defends the Constitution until it really counts and then says, no, I'm not going to do it.
Well, the power of the incumbency is tremendous, and these guys know that, and Lieberman certainly got a leg up in that department. I don't know. I know you agree with all over this nation, we need to sweep the dead wood out of the party.
Yeah, we really
and,
do.
And get our foundation strong again.
And I give latitude to people more in red states, but especially here. I mean, Joe Lieberman, unless he's caught, you know, raping a child or something like that, he's pretty much a shoo-in. So there's no reason for him to take these positions that he does.
Exactly. So.
Well, anyway, good luck, guy, and I'm so happy the show's back on. And again, I'm sorry I missed it last week, but I'll be listening regularly from now on.
Great to hear from you. Thanks for
Great.
Calling.
Thanks a lot, guy. Thank you. Bye bye.
Yes. Interesting situation up there. Lieberman has there's no question about it. He's got a tremendous advantage. The power of the incumbency is well, it's something that's very, very, very hard to overcome. I can't think of the percentage right now, but it's, as you know, it's way up there. It's 80 or 90%, probably in the 90 percentile bracket of the incumbents getting back in if they run. And it's a damn shame. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I'd make all the terms 6 years for House and Senate, and give them one and done, and we wouldn't have to worry about incumbents. I know there are people that argue with me on that, but I think 6 years is enough out of any man's life, and you ought to go back to making an honest living again. You go through those halls of Congress, and there are 100 senators in the Senate office buildings. And I think it'd be safe to say there's 100 of them that think they ought to be president or think they're qualified or, you know, that's how it is. You get to be a senator of the United States and that's just the way they act. So I don't know. And the House, you know, they run perpetually. You have a 2-year term. You run from the day you get elected. You start running again. And 2 years, that's one bone I have to pick with the Founding Fathers. I think that was a mistake, and it has led to perpetual campaigning, perpetual fundraising, and it has led to having lobbyist money by the boatload in campaigns.